Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mliwa Gavaza, and for today, we are getting into a somewhat different, sort of business that I don't think we've explored yet on this platform. You'll know that, we usually talk to a lot of economists, a lot of fund managers on this platform, a lot of people that have startups. We've spoken to people in the hospitality industry, travel operators, hotel operators, even getting into the likes of social media, what's going on with the cryptocurrencies, all manner of business. But I don't think we've ever explored what's going on in the pet industry. So to help us to unpack what's actually going on in that industry, we are joined by Irene Robenheimer, who is the co-founder of Rogs, to give us some insight into what's actually going on in their business, what's going on in the industry. I'm very curious to see what's been happening in the industry, but more than anything else, just to learn a little bit something about what's going on in the pet industry and who exactly is participating in this part of the market. Irene, greetings to you today.
Morning, Madiba. Thank you very much for the opportunity to chat with you. And yes, the pet industry is a fun industry to be in and a little bit off the main radar, which is part of the fun. So people don't always know what we're up to. But it's an exciting industry in the sense that it's been a growing market sector for the last few decades. And obviously, post-lockdown, it's had a spike in growth. So we've been on that journey. I've been happy to be a part of it.
I think that might be, some insight to then get from you. Firstly, the business itself as Rogs, when did that start? And had you always been, sort of inclined towards pet businesses of some sort? Or were you a doctor or a lawyer who decided that you were done with pushing paper and, you should go and cater to pets?
Interesting question. So the company was started in 1995 by my brother-in-law, Paul Fuller, and myself. We were traveling overseas. Both of us were yacht skippers for a number of years, working on big yachts, chartering and sailing the world. And when we came back, we were looking for a way of making an income. And we both had different business ideas. He started some things like flower exports. I started some things like making Causa greeting cards, which you couldn't see in the retail market. And we had this one little project together where we were going to do sport accessories, sunglass cords to be specific, little things that hang around your neck, because we used to use those items on the yachts. And that was, of all of our business ideas, that was the only one that actually got a bit of traction. So we abandoned all of our other naive plans and got going with the sunglass cords. And it evolved from making them in our own flat to driving down to a store and each one of us selling little packs of 35, exchanging it over the counter for cash. Slowly but surely, we got a bit of a sales team together. And after a few months, we started employing the odd person to help us manufacture these items. And the first years of the business was about building a brand of sport accessories. And as we all know, there are big brands in the sport industry, the Nikes of the world. There's big brands in the surf industry. And same in the optical industry. So wherever we were going, we were a minute little business trying to draw attention to ourselves amongst very big brands. And as we evolved, we ended up making watch straps, which is something that was within our means of manufacture, too much infrastructure. And we were making these surf style watch straps going into the surf shops. And at one point, we started making them and realizing we can make dog collars that look cool and had got a little bit more of an identity than what was traditional at the time. I'm talking late 1990s, early 2000s. The dog collars and accessories that was available was very much geared like hardware store style. And that's sort of like where the transition came. So to answer your question, we didn't kick off as a pet in the pet industry. We stumbled into it. And once we found our feet in the pet industry, we loved it so much that we transitioned fully into the pet industry.
You know, that is quite an interesting story and way that you guys actually got into, the pet industry. And I really think this is one of those, as somewhat unusual as it is, I believe this is what people mean when they say that they got into certain industries organically. Though unusual, but it was organic because one thing literally led to another. Moving, all the way from the straps on, people's sunglasses to making, some of these little accessories for pets, and from there, getting into it. So maybe you could give us some insight then, now that you guys are in it, because you guys have been in it for a long time. I think 2 decades from my estimation, just based on the 1995 start date that you gave. And then you're saying that in the late 90s, early 2000s, that's when you got into the hair part of it. So roughly 2 decades. How's been that journey, right? I'm sure you've probably seen everything now. I mean, the turn of the millennium, the global financial crisis, now we have COVID, in terms of the things that are happening economically. Do those things affect how people treat their pets, or is it a completely different set of considerations in your industry?
No, you're quite right. And to your first point, I think our journey as entrepreneurs has been one of, we have to adapt. We try things. In the beginning, we knew nothing, but the idea was just try. And then over time, we learn things and we adjust our plans. And I think the last year has taught us again how radically we have to think out of the box and be nimble to adjust. So that's an ongoing journey. But to speak more specifically about the pet industry, as I said, once we arrived in the pet industry, we suddenly found more growth there than we managed to get in the sport accessory industry, because we were such a small player against major players. And our offering in the pet industry was more unique. So we found more rapid growth. People loved the idea that we brought a product, that we built a brand with a personality and an image and a specific appearance that people could relate to. What we didn't know at the time, but have now found out over time, is that the pet industry has been growing for various reasons. If I recollect how I grew up, and our family dog used to be kept outside the house in the yard. And then later on, when I had my first dog, the dog was allowed in the house, but we certainly didn't pamper him too much, and he slept on an old blanket. Whereas my latest dog now is such a part of the family, I'm way down in the rankings at home. When I get home from the office, everybody runs out to greet the dog first, and then I arrive. So there's a trend that's known as the humanization of the pet industry. So over the last few decades around the world, people are spending more time and effort on their pets. They're having smaller families. In cities, they have small pets in apartments, and they really pamper the animals. So there's been a big shift in the number of decades, and we've been part of that journey unbeknown to us when we arrived, until we realized it was going on, and we have been riding that wave during this journey and doing our part in it.
When you look at what's actually going on right now, as you said, sort of more the humanizing of what's going on with pets, treating them better, all of those trends, your business now, all of these years later, are there any metrics that you can share with us just to give us an idea of, I guess the size and scope of the operation, where you guys started? Because right now I know that you are joining us, from Cape Town. Have you always been based there? Did you have any trysts across borders? Have you always been a South African business?
Yes, we've always been a South African business. When we started, like I said earlier, we used to start making the items in the spare room of our apartment. We had a 2-bedroom apartment. From there, we grew to a tiny factory in an industrial area, employed the first few people. When visitors came to see us, we would go and get people off the street who just sit down and make us look bigger, put empty shoeboxes up on the shelves, just pretend that we have stock and things like that, the typical entrepreneurial start. And probably one of our earlier growth opportunities came that we were just aiming at selling product in South Africa. And somebody saw, a traveler in South Africa saw our product and said, "Well, we love what you've got and we'd love to sell it overseas." So we said, "Sure, no problem." It wasn't part of our business plan, but go for it. And they managed to find us some foreign markets. They were small at the time. And at one point, somebody invited us to attend, it was still for the sport accessories, the sunglass cords, to attend a trade fair overseas in Milano, where they exhibit all the optical gear. Now, we arrived there highly intimidated. I mean, there were all these major brands with sophisticated booths that they put together. We arrived with a few suitcases and cardboard boxes, and we nearly got onto the plane and wanted to come back. We were so intimidated with what we had. But we managed to put together a presentable little booth. And on that booth, we managed to attract international business that certainly leapfrogged the business our business to another size. We were forced to rapidly employ more people, expand, get a few more small business units together to put everybody there. It's a very hand labor intensive assembly line. So the learnings out of that was once we were in the pet industry, we replicated that model. We attend global trade fairs, and there in one shot, we get to meet all the players from different parts of the world, whether they're distributors, competitor brands, retail groups, manufacturers, suppliers. And that's certainly been a wonderful opportunity to expand the business overseas. We're still Cape Town based. We still manufacture in our own factory. Over the years, we did go through a growth phase where we intentionally outsourced a lot of our manufacture, which meant that a lot of our products were made in the East in those days. We used to fly to China frequently, set up factories there that make product for us, while maintaining our own factory here. Now, what's relevant in the recent years, we've brought a big shift back to our manufacturing in South Africa. And we expanded our production setup, expanded our premises size, the machinery, the mechanization of what we do, upskilled a lot of team members, and even expanded our total staff complement. So it's been a long journey. I'm trying to summarize it as fast as I can.
It sounds like there's a lot to summarize inside there. So how big is this team at the moment, and how are they distributed?
So at the moment, we have about 250 people at our premises here in Cape Town, and we are linked with many other companies. So it's always difficult to say, who's the Rogues team? We distribute to 90 countries, which typically sounds like a big number. It is, but like most businesses, we can break it down in a Pareto breakdown where the core of our business lies probably in the top 10 countries. And what we do have is long-standing partnerships. Many of our customers have been doing business with us around the 20-year mark. And many of our employees have been around upwards of 20 years. So a big part of the Rogues philosophy is a long-term outlook, where we try and build strong relationships with, whether it's a supplier, whether it's an employee, whether it's a customer base. We've always believed in a principle that it pays off for us in the long term if we can maintain those relationships and don't have to have short-term gains and then have to find a new customer.
Sorry to interrupt you very quickly, but one of the things that's really interesting to me is the fact that you guys do distribute to so many countries. And as you said, following that Pareto principle, you always have that 80-20 sort of situation where you have a small portion of countries that are probably accounting for the majority of what's going on. I'm quite interested in the behavior, though, because you noted in your own life, your own journey in terms of, treating your own pets. How would you characterize the way that people are treating their pets between the countries, or rather how South Africa treats its pets in relation to other parts of the world? Is South Africa, one of the kinder markets? Is it one of the ones where, pet owners are spending the most? Or would you say that it's people overseas in Europe or maybe the US?
Yeah, that it is an interesting question. There are definitely different trends. And as a global supplier, we have to adapt what we offer to different markets. If we go to a market like Singapore, all the pets are small and indoor. And if you go to a market like USA, there's a lot of large properties, outdoor, big dogs. So there are different trends. However, it's also true that the world has got such transparency in seeing habits nowadays with Instagram and Facebook. So it's not that, how can I say, it's not that different in outlook. It may be different in the smaller facets of it. And South Africa is not that different to the rest of the world. I would say a few years behind. The sophistication in markets like Europe or USA or or even Asian cities now are very big on how they pamper their dogs. But South Africa is on that same trend, maybe just a few years behind. And I don't know if that answers your question.
No. Yeah, it certainly does. Because I guess what you've just said would sort of indicate or hint at the fact that if there's certain other parts of the world that are pampering their dogs a little bit more, then it means that would certainly mean, at least in my estimation, that there's probably, you know, that little bit of room to catch up, which would be an opportunity for growth.
Yeah, I agree. And it's probably true to say that in many ways, there's opportunities for South Africa to observe what world trends are and replicate them. But I would also say we'd have to do them with our own flavor. I think when we just try and replicate what other countries are doing, that's a bit futile. We have so much to be proud of. So whatever trends we want to replicate, it's nice to add our own flavor to it.
And from what you've been able to see, not really what you've been able to see, but someone who's listening to this might also then be curious if, you know, the selection of accessories and stuff that you guys make, is it only catering to dogs, or do you guys sort of go beyond that? Because I'm on the ROGS website right now, and I'm seeing lots of dogs. So I'm just curious if other animals are catered to.
No, yeah, we do primarily dogs and cats. So we do not go to small animals. And we also don't go to equestrian products like horses. And it's an interesting thing as the company has evolved. In the beginning, you try and just expand. You just add on. And we're actually now at a phase of the company where we refocus on our core strengths. So in many ways, our product offering went wider and wider. We just added on, and our markets went wider, and our supplier base went wider. And now we're at a phase where we say, well, that was a bit of a shotgun approach, and we need to narrow that down now. I wouldn't call ourselves having a sniper focus, but we're really trying to have a better approach than just the shotgun approach where we've added on, because that brought with it a lot of complexity, and we were no longer, we've dropped levels of excellence along the way. And the phase that we're in now is to narrow down to what we do well and do it better with greater excellence. So focusing on the core customers, our core product offering, our core suppliers, and therefore also pet-wise, it's dog and cat. Accessory-wise, it's primarily collars and leashes, which is what we started off with. But we do have other accessories like beds and toys, which do a lot for offering. Then we have broader accessories than that, but we have so much growth opportunity just in our core business that's the current focus where we find ourselves at the 26-year mark.
Now, you know, after 26 years in a certain type of business, that's a long time, especially at a time where we often talk about businesses not being able to make it past the 1 year, the 2 year, the 3 year mark. So from that point of view, what's left for you, you know, as an entrepreneur, as someone who started out, you know, making things that were in a completely different sector? You know, sporting wise, but you've now found yourselves here, and you know, things have gone well. You've expanded out of the country, you've built the team, you've got your supply chain, everything as well. But from you personally, because I'm sure along the way there've been milestones that you've hit. I think you highlighted earlier on, you know, that those first opportunities to sell overseas and the like. But for you, what's left to do? What do you think you haven't done yet?
Oh, no, there's a lot. Maybe I'm making it sound like we are so well sorted. No, we've got lots to do, and it's fun. We're in a fun phase of the business. Fun has always been a focus area of the business, but we know that in times of hardship, it's not easy to just have fun. Last year was a very tough chapter for us to get through. But in terms of what's left, what we're looking at doing next, it's, like I was saying, it's more of what we've done. In other words, we now understand what's working for us. And in there lies a lot of going back to our roots, going back to our core, being authentically who we are. There was a chapter in the middle that we're trying to do everything. You're so desperate to please. You see growth opportunities. And now we kind of, I'd say, sobered up beyond that point where we say, listen, hold on. We're actually confusing people when we're trying to do this and that. Now suddenly you want to please a German customer, you want to be like a German, and then you want to be like an Italian, and then you want to, and actually we're just really celebrating our South Africanness at this point. The fact that we can design our products locally, and we have enough understanding of our markets to make it relevant in, call it Europe, USA, Australia. We can market it here. So there's a marketing skill that relates to the lifestyles in those markets. We can produce it here. And we've seen now, especially post-COVID, there's an increased appreciation for alternate sources than the mainstream supply from China. And I don't want to run China down. We have good friends there. We work closely with them. A big part of our supply chain is there. But we certainly pick up a trend where people are saying, wow, I want to buy it elsewhere. Logistic complications have emphasized that, where people just simply can't even get the product, even if it's available. I'm sure that will rectify itself again over time. But during this window of time, we have emphasized our localness. So we drive a whole agenda on local is lekker. We can supply from one area all of our products, whereas previously we would hypothetically try and supply somebody, call it a customer in Austria. Some products come from this factory in China. Some products are available here. Some products are supplied from our hub in Holland, and that's complicated for people to engage in. So on the road ahead, I would say more of the same, and then also the aspect of there's more to business than only business. We've established an academy way back in 2012, 2013 that focuses on three core aspects, on education, on youth development, and on nutrition through urban farming. And that's been a great passion add to the business to keep us all on a wavelength that there's more than just the financial agenda to see how much there is to make, but there's got to be a deeper value in what we do. And that brings like-minded people to our business. People that appreciate that, can relate to our company, like to work there, like to trade with us. People that don't relate to that, this might be a filter for them to not trade with us.
When it does come to, you know, the money side of things, because I'm certainly, like I said, I was on the website and I did note that you guys have that academy that is, you know, quite prominent there. But taking a step back a little bit into the wider industry, because we focused a lot on ROGS, the wider industry itself, right, in South Africa, who are you actually competing against, you know, and where would you sort of place yourselves just along that totem pole?
So when one talks about the pet industry, it's interesting. One, like the human industry, you find your different channels to market. So for us, we focus on pet speciality. So we would not go into, say, grocery stores that sell pet products. And we would not go into, call it the real bargain store sector or the markets. It's merely a positioning of our brand, because our brand is about value, innovation, quality, service, all of those elements. We can't be everywhere. And price point wise, we focus on more on the premium side, where people have appreciation for those values. So when we talk competitors, it's always difficult to define all competitors, because it's true that we lose some business to the chain stores, but that doesn't mean we want to go there. We realize we can't be all things to all people. So for us in South Africa, the pet industry as an independent industry is defined by the vet shops and the pet shops. And to get back to your point from earlier, how does South Africa differ from global markets? In more advanced global markets, you would very often find very strong pet store chains that are the size of superstores. And they might be like a country like USA has got two groups that each one has 1,300 stores. And those stores are mega stores. Now, it's a large market. In South Africa, that's only starting to develop here, where the retail groups are growing. Online's obviously growing a lot. And that's just the world trend. And competitors, there's not a lot of South African manufacturers. So most of our competitors would be imported products, and we're happy to compete with that. We believe we can offer something. We're not always beating them on price, but we take our service and our delivery and our after sales service and the warranties on the product series. So from that point of view, we managed to carve out a portion of the market that we are happy with.
On that issue of price that you've just raised now, when you're looking at different markets right now, as you said, part of the competitive landscape has to do with imported products. But seeing as it is that you guys do distribute to so many different countries, how have you actually thought around pricing? Because, you know, sometimes we hear that, what's the word I'm looking for? We often hear that products produced in certain parts of the world end up being more expensive than products in other parts of the world. And South Africa is thought to be one of those countries where things come in a bit cheaper. So when you go into more advanced markets, has that sort of played in your favor, or are the dynamics completely different from what I've just described?
So one thing that has played in our favor is because we spread our global markets into three currencies. So we have a block of our business that we sell into Europe and we earn euros. And then we have a block of other export markets where we earn in dollars. And then we have a block of our business in South Africa. It's a strong market for us where we earn in rands. And then our cost base is also spread between a lot of rand expenses and also a great deal of dollar expenses for imported raw materials and the likes. So there's a natural hedging against the exchange rate. That already gives us an advantage over many other companies that are either just a pure exporter or pure importer. And it allows us to buffer our pricing or buffer. We can put a time buffer on before we react. And our customers appreciate that. So very often when we have a radical exchange rate change, we may take a knock in one market. I remember very well way back in 2008, we launched a range here, which was fully imported. And I don't know if you can recollect, I think the exchange rate went from 7 to 12 in to the dollar, 7 to rand to 12 rand to the dollar in a period of 2-3 weeks. For all the economists, they will probably challenge my data right now, but the effect was radical to us. And we were selling the program at a loss in South Africa, but we maintained the price because during that same time, we were gaining more on our exports where the price was fixed and we were earning more there. And then slowly but surely, the exchange rate has got a tendency to correct itself again, whereas people that were doing pure imports by the container have to reprice their product on the shipment. And that's something that we've been able to avoid throughout our diverse business model. So there's a natural hedging.
No, it makes sense when you put it like that, and especially the different blocks of currencies that you guys, you know, are dealing with. So I guess having a lot of your expenses in rands then works out as a hedge from that you know, from that point of view. I have to say that I'm actually enjoying this and just getting that insight into what's going on in the pet industry. But in the interest of time, we do have time for maybe one more point. And it's something that you've alluded to quite a bit during today's discussion, and that's around the pandemic. It's the one thing that we're all going through. It's the one thing that's been the center of life for the last going on 2 years now. The COVID-19 pandemic, how would you say it's affected the industry itself and your business, either in South Africa or other countries? I remember noting during the hard parts of lockdown that, you know, where you had liquor stores and all of these other types of stores shutting down, pet stores were still alive and, you know, alive and running. And it made perfect sense because people are locked down, that's probably the time when you're going to be thinking about your pet a bit more. But on the ground, what did you guys see?
So probably like all other people in South Africa and I guess around the world, at first, we were just completely rattled. At the 3 days' notice, we had to send 250 people home and trying to figure out whether we'll ever come back to our factory. How will we maintain weekly wages, monthly salaries? What does TERS mean? And all of the like. And so that first month was traumatic. That brought us back to entrepreneurial roots. And we can't just sit here and wait. Although none of us knew what lies ahead, we then got licenses to start making PPE products. We made masks like most people did, but we had a lot of materials and sewing machine, and we could reopen with, I think, 10% of our staff at first and then 30% of the staff. So I guess nimbleness was the first reactivity. And that idea, because we started our business from nothing, it's still in our blood, the idea of, hey, we'll try things. So we've got a saying that resilience trumps brilliance. It's not about whether we know the future, but we're willing to try and we're willing to learn our lessons and adapt. Part of our trauma of the time was maintaining cash flow for a future that we had no idea whether it would be income. So we drove our stocks down to service markets. It took us a while to actually come to grips with the idea that, hold on, the pet industry continues and is actually growing, because that was so counterintuitive to think that people would actually be going out and spending precious money on their pet if they're just fighting for survival. But it took us a while to really accept that point. Then we had to suddenly dial up again. And so how do we get enough materials? And that coincided with the massive logistical challenges around the world, where lead times in Asia became very long. Ships are passing Cape Town Harbor and going up to Namibia and then passing again, going to Durban. And so we've had to dial up our stock significantly. It puts a lot of cash flow pressure on the business. But it plays into the trend that I touched on earlier, where we've sort of observed a global trend where there's a fresh view where people value the appeal of localization in a world that has previously been obsessed with globalization. So suddenly people in Europe are asking, can't you supply us this product? We used to get it from China, but can you supply it? Now, I don't want to pick on China all the time, but that's the major supplier. So apart from, say, European countries trying to source on their own continent, they're asking us, can you supply this for us? Can you supply that? So we have really expanded our local production during this time, and that we foresee that as not a temporary reaction to COVID only, but it is our focus for the next era in anyone until the world has got another major change. So that's how we have responded to COVID and the lockdown realities. We're fortunate to be in an industry that has seen growth, and we feel dearly for the other industries that have been completely winded. And we understand that people that were in those industries could not have foreseen it. We did not have the wisdom to pick this industry for this pandemic. This is just, we were the fortunate ones out of this specific black swan.
Perhaps as we end off, a quick follow-up to, you know, everything that you're saying. You did allude to the fact that there has been that shift towards people looking to source products from places outside of China. You know, not to pick on China, but I do understand where you're coming from on that point of view. And, you know, businesses like yours do start to benefit from some of those shifts, because as economists, we always spoke about the fact that COVID-19 is going to cause shifts in the global economy and the global supply chain and all of this stuff. And I think what you've just described sort of gives a concrete example of how that has actually happened in, you know, in practicality. So my last one is just a follow-up to say, maybe we can get a quick comment from you just around manufacturing as a whole, since you guys have been manufacturing for such a long time.
Oh, yeah. Now you're touching a nerve. because I think it could be more meaningful for us to see South Africa as a country focusing more on manufacture, agriculture. We have to find jobs for people. We can't just be in the service industry and import items. And I do believe that South Africa is a very competent country with diverse resources, diverse people, diverse skills that should be a strong manufacturing hub. We've got many benefits being in the same time zone as Europe, which is a major market. We've got we can service those markets with great understanding. And so we are frustrated when we see manufacturing having been shifted away. Textile industry was very strong in Cape Town 2-3 decades ago, and we go up with the tide together with other manufacturers growing. So our focus or our aspiration is to see more people embracing manufacture. There should be more machine suppliers, more raw material suppliers here. We are now bringing a lot of our raw materials back to South African manufacturers because we can give them the quantities. We say, listen, we use a few 100,000 meters of this webbing every month. If you can match that, we can buy it from you instead of putting it on a ship, which we have to order 90 days ahead of time. Plus, it's going to take 75 days to reach us once it's departed. So yeah, if there's any way that we can inspire other people to embrace manufacture here, that'll be our biggest win, because we benefit from other manufacturers growing. And obviously, we want to live in a country where people have employment and have ways of earning a living. And manufacturing is such a big sector in that. So I truly hope that that's one of the positive outflows of COVID, where people are forced to shift and then fundamentally see the benefits of the shift. And don't just do it out of necessity, but do it out of desire. And each company that does it inspires another company to do it and teaches another company how to do it. And I certainly believe that should be part of our future plan.
So that's been us. We're talking to Irene Robenheimer, who is the co-founder of ROGS, giving us some insight into the state of the pet industry in South Africa and also around the world, talking about how they got started. It was a very interesting story about how they found themselves in the industry, you know, starting out, you know, sailing ships around the world and then coming back to South Africa, trying to figure out what to do, you know, starting out in one business. But as you're making these accessories, you then stumble upon the pet industry, and it's, you know, been more than 20 years that they've been at it. And he's saying that despite the initial shock of COVID-19 last year, which sent their business into a bit of disarray, it ended up being, you know, a bit of a blessing, because people were still spending money on pets, and their industry is one of the few that's actually grown during this time. But even that growth wasn't expected. They were in a survival mode, but quickly realized that though we're in survival mode, people are spending more money, which means we actually can scale up our operations. Very interesting also talking about the differences between the ways that people distribute pet products in South Africa versus other parts of the world, talking about how they've protected themselves from the fluctuations in the rand, you know, through the euro, through the US dollar, but also just talking about just generally the state of the pet industry, the fact that people are pampering their pets a bit more, buying more accessories at this time, and that's been a shift that they've seen, you know, over decades. And also just ending off highlighting the fact that some of the shifts that they have seen from people, you know, looking for other places to source their products, given the disruption in global supply chains, is something that is likely going to be with us for years to come, and not something that was purely reactionary because of the COVID-19 pandemic. Irene, thank you so much for being with us. Fascinating conversation.
Madiwa, thank you very much. It's great chatting to you. And yeah, thank you very much for the opportunity, and I wish you well.
This is Madiwa's Take.
Certainly one of the most fascinating conversations we've had on the Business Day Spotlight, simply because I think the pet industry is one that we haven't, you know, explored as much in the past. So, you know, really great to see and hear what's going on that end. And it touches on so many different issues, supply chain, you know, hedging the currency, manufacturing, you know, building up that team, the effects of COVID, the type of disposable income that consumers have to spend money on pets. You heard Irene talking about the fact that they thought that you know, their business was going to suffer because of what was going on with COVID, people, you know, tightening up their budgets, but they actually ended up finding that people were actually spending more on their pets, all of those different factors. So it looks like this is one of those industries that has been resilient through the pandemic, and one that's actually growing. So it would be great to talk to other people in the sector, because we always talk about the cyclical nature of the economy, because the fact that the pet industry is alive and kicking and thriving probably means that they're probably doing a lot in their own supply chain when it comes to things like employment. You heard Irene talking about things like manufacturing, for example, the fact that they've moved a lot of their manufacturing back, and it's working in their favor simply because you now have the shift from international markets demanding South African produced products. So all of those different factors hinting at something that we did speak about last year when the pandemic came into effect, about all those shifts, likely shifts in the global economy where people want to be sourcing their products from as opposed to others. So really great from that point of view. And it would be great, as I said, get more people in, talk about what else is going on in the industry. Maybe we can talk to people that are in dog grooming, for example, maybe get into some of the other parts of the industry, such as the equestrian part that Irene and his business don't cover, and see what's going on there. And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter. We're #BDSpotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.